Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, sports fans. It is Saturday, April 19th, 2014. Yes, we are broadcasting on a special Saturday with the Easter holiday tomorrow. We are coming to you a day early in the week. The NHL playoffs have reached us. The NFL draft is right around the corner. We're going to break both of those down for you today. How's everyone doing today? I am Ryan Stern, your host. Welcome to Beyond the Bench. The phone number to call and join the program, Talk Sports, 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. You are listening to Beyond the Bench. Follow us on Twitter, at Beyond the Bench. Go to facebook.com/beyondthebenchBSP. That BSP does stand for Back Sports Page. Follow Back Sports Page on Twitter, at Back Sports Page. Go to facebook.com/backsportspage and go to backsportspage.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at rstern33bsp. What an exciting time this is for sports. Over these next couple weeks are probably around my favorite times of the year. As much as I love the NFL football season, the playing season, if you've listened to the show, you know that I'm a big NFL draft junkie, and we're going to get into the NFL draft in a little bit. But the non-playing season just really has something special that I love. And with the NFL draft, free agency, it's still a great time right now for the NFL. You have the hockey and basketball playoffs starting. We're just coming off of the NCAA tournament. And lost in translation somewhere is the baseball season opening up. And I think that what you're starting to see is the early part of the baseball season, aside from opening day. I was discussing this with BackSportsPage.com founder Randy Zelia yesterday. We were talking about baseball and its sort of place right now. And early on in the season, aside from opening day, baseball it sort of goes away until really the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals come to a conclusion. I know baseball does have its diehard fans, and people do still watch baseball. But there isn't any hype, really, like I said, aside from opening day, really until mid-June, up until maybe the early part, or up until the All-Star break. And I think it's going to be a recurring problem in the near future for Major League Baseball. When you have the NFL offseason, or the non-playing season, as one Rich Eisen calls it, when the non-playing season gets more buzz about it than actual regular season games, you know that something is on its way to be going wrong. And right now, I think the NFL draft is more popular than regular season, early season, regular season baseball. If you want to talk about that, if you have any thoughts as to whether or not you think baseball is stronger than I believe it is, if you think it's going downhill, give us a call, 760-283-0846. We're going to open up the show with a little NHL playoff hockey. There have been two series that have already two games played. The one that I'm going to open up with is the Ducks and the Stars. If any of you haven't seen what happened to Ryan Getzlaf in Game 1, guy gets a puck to the face. He takes a selfie that has gone viral in his car with, it looks to be about 20 stitches below his bottom lip. Swollen lip, bruised cheek. It looked like he got beaten up by 20 people. And this was after he scored two goals in Game 1. And then he comes back in Game 2 and puts up a goal and an assist while he's wearing a half cage to protect the bottom part of his face. He shows to you, watching Ryan Getzlaf and what he had to go through, shows why hockey players are just on a different level than everybody else. Even football players, and I love football. I love baseball. You tell me that you're gonna get hit in the face, have your face split open where you need that much work done, and then you're going to come back less than 48 hours later and play the most physical game or maybe the most physically grueling game on the planet, or at least of the major sports. This is why playoff hockey is the best TV that you are going to watch. So if you're not on board, I strongly urge you to get on board and start watching some playoff hockey. One of the games last night really stuck out to me was the Detroit-Boston game. Boston, the President's Trophy winners, best record in the entire NHL. And they couldn't have drawn a worse opponent. Because if there is any team that you don't want to see if you're a higher seed, it's the Detroit Red Wings. All they do is make the playoffs. And they've had injury after injury after injury this year, and yet they've still managed to win enough games to get into the playoffs. And I said I did pick Boston to win the series, but I did pick them to win in seven. And I do think that, well, I think anyone believes that the winner of that series will end up in the Eastern Conference Finals. And this is the first year for the Red Wings in the Eastern Conference with the new division realignments. So this is new territory for the Red Wings. They're not there, but it's also new territory for anybody that they have to play. They don't have much experience playing the Eastern Conference teams on a more consistent basis. But all they do, and Pavel Datsyuk just, and I still think Pavel Datsyuk, if I had to start a team right now, I may pick Pavel Datsyuk. If I don't go with a goalie, Pavel Datsyuk may be the number one player that I decide to build my team around. He wins faceoffs. He plays defensive hockey. He may be he's one of the top two or three passers in the league. He has the absolute best hands of anyone that maybe I've ever seen play the game. And he scores with 3 minutes left in the third period. The Red Wings jump out to a 1-0 series lead after winning the game 1-0. And I think all other Eastern Conference teams that are in the playoffs are rooting for the Red Wings. Because I still it's the fear that the Bruins will bring into the series, knowing the way that they've played all year, the way that Jerome Iginla bounced and had a great season, even in his advanced age. Milan Lucic, Patrice Bergeron, look what Tuukka Rask did in net for them. The Bruins are the President's Trophy winners for a reason. They are the best team in the NHL. Records get thrown out when it comes to playoff hockey. And I think most teams think that they would have a better shot beating the Red Wings than they do beating the Bruins. And as a Ranger fan, I know that that's how I feel. So I apologize, especially to some of my my cousins who may be listening up in the Boston area. But I will be pulling for the Detroit Red Wings to come out on top over the Boston Bruins in this series. We're going to jump into the Ranger Flyer series when Charles Curtis joins us. He should be with us any minute. The other Metropolitan Division matchup you have is Pittsburgh against Columbus. Don't be surprised if this one goes longer than you expect it. Yeah, I know Pittsburgh took all five regular season matchups between the two teams. I know that they came back from a 3-1 deficit the other night to win the game 4-3. Columbus is good. And Columbus is real good at home, too. And we all know the propensity for Marc-Andre Fleury to all of a sudden flame out and let in five goals and just give the other team confidence as they are going throughout a series. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be the reason that the Penguins win a series or lose a series, because we know that the Penguins are going to score goals. The biggest question is, are they going to be able to keep the puck out of the net? But joining us right now from NJ.com is the one, the only Charles Curtis. How are you doing this morning, Charles? Thank you for joining us. Good morning, Charles. How are you? Good morning, Charles. Are you there? I apologize for some technical difficulties. We will try and reestablish a connection with Charles, but in the meantime, back to the Penguins and Blue Jackets series. This kid that the Blue Jackets have, Ryan Johansson, is going to be a real special player, and he may open up some eyes throughout this this series. Charles, do we have you now?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
All right.
Fantastic.
How are you this morning, Charles? Charles Curtis, once again, of NJ.com. Thank you for giving us a few minutes this morning.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. I think, you know, all that talk about Marc-Andre Fleury really knocked me off of the song. So it's understandable. You know, he can be a little enigmatic.
Want to jump into the Ranger Flyer series, and it was sort of maybe a wake up call how the Rangers came out in the first few minutes and dominated the game. They were out shooting I think Philly 5-0 at the time, and then the Flyers' first shot goes in the net. And a lot of times you can sort of see something like that happen and it deflates a team. But the Rangers kept on pushing and they dominated the rest of the game. How do you think, do you think that was a lot of Alain Vigneault? Do you think it was a lot of the players? But how important was it for that goal to not deflate the Rangers?
Well, it's funny you say that because you watched that first 5-10 minutes and you're thinking it wasn't even 10 minutes because they scored within about 7 minutes of the first period. But you look at the Rangers as a team as a whole this year, and they were getting used to Alain Vigneault's system and kind of being on the puck, as it were, which is one of those cliches you hear in the locker room. But they were just constantly attacking and constantly hitting. You know, they were very physical in a game where you sort of expect them to be a little more finesse against a team that's very physical. But yeah, that first goal, they didn't look like they were deflated after that first goal, and I think that was certainly a key. And I think they knew, given that the way they were playing the first period in the first 5 minutes, that they could rebound easily from that Andrew McDonald shot, and they did. I mean, Zuccarello obviously scored with about 3 minutes later, and they stuck with it through the next couple of periods. And Philly always seemed like they were back on their heels, and we'll see if that continues to happen in the next game. And I suspect Philly will come out again, being physical and responding in such a way to try to establish the first 5 minutes and be that team that they were during the regular season that aggravated opponents and frustrated opponents by being physical and being, you know, kind of needling after the whistle and things like that.
Do you think some of the fact that that they were on their heels was the fact that it is Ray Emery in net and not Steve Mason, and maybe they don't trust their goalie as much, and their sort of attacking style of play that they like to establish really never got off the ground?
if you ask somebody that in the locker room or the dressing room, I think they'd probably say, no way, we're confident with Ram or, all that. I don't think it was that much of a factor. I do think that Steve Mason will be the X factor the rest of the way. If he's healthy, if he's ready, he's obviously the better goaltender. So I kind of hope that they wouldn't make that excuse. I do think that it was just a question of the Flyers coming out a little bit and saying, whoa, this team is kind of, being physical. I just think there were certain shifts where the Rangers just kept winning puck battles. They kept the pressure on. I think in the third period, obviously, you saw it when the floodgates opened, that
right. They
were making these beautiful passes. They were, they were just kind of winning all those little battles. It's funny because those are the kind of things that you would hear from last season where it was you have to be on the puck, you have to win in the neutral zone. And I think those are obviously tenets of what Alain Vigneault does. It's just that the Rangers are a little bit more of a finesse team, and that if they can do some of that physical stuff without making any mistakes to send in the penalty box, they're a rough team to face no matter who the opponent is.
Now, one of the key factors to the Rangers' win in Game 1 was the play of Brad Richards, and it wasn't just the third period. Brad Richards had a real good game throughout all three periods, and then when the floodgates opened in the third period, talk about his importance and we know that they don't have a Brian Leetch as a power play quarterback, but he plays the point on the power play, and it seems to be that when the power play is going well, it's when Brad Richards is the one that is really taking charge on the ice.
Absolutely, there's no doubt about that, and I think Brad Richards is so important to the team because he's got this Stanley Cup experience. He's won a cup. He has years and years of experience, and I think last year, though he was asked about it after the game, I think last year weighs on his mind. He said, I don't want to think about or talk about last year when he was benched, put to the fourth line, and scratched. So I think some of that is in his mind saying, look, I got to rebound from that performance from last year and show the world that I'm one of the better playoff forwards in the playoffs this year. So I think that was part of it. But, yeah, look at the pass that he made to Derek Stepan for that 3-1 goal. Just vision and timing and instinct, I think. And those are the things that Brad Richards can do when he's not overthinking. And I don't want to say that he was overthinking things last year. I think there was a lot of instruction being handed to him. And I frankly think one of the reasons why Alain Vigneault was hired is to allow Brad Richards' game to flourish, to feel open, on the ice, to feel that he can make those kinds of plays and not have to think about so many things defensively or, kind of all the defensive along the boards, be physical. He looks like a player who is relaxed in the system and kind of working with that. And so, yeah, he has to be probably one of the biggest X factors for the Rangers, if not probably the guy who's going to carry them throughout this playoff series.
Now, you mentioned that Brad Richards does have the Stanley Cup experience. One of his teammates is Marty St. Louis, who was his teammate when they won the Cup in Tampa Bay. We all know that he's struggled to put the puck in the net, but he's still accumulating assists and still putting up some points, but what I'm noticing with Marty St. Louis is that the aggressive nature of him going and attacking the net just doesn't seem to be there, and it looks like he's looking for the pass first and not the shot. Do you think it's just him still trying to get accustomed to the new system or trying to play with different players, or why do you think we haven't seen Marty St. Louis put the puck in the net more often?
I think you pointed it out. I think some of it is the new system, but even though, again, he's had a few weeks to get used to this. The pass-first thing is kind of what I think is in my mind. I think if he feels like he's cold, then, he's always going to look for the pass. But, he has 6 assists in his last 3 games, and he scored, obviously, on April 1st against Vancouver, which was the big monkey off of his back. But, yeah, if the Rangers want to have a chance, let's say they get past the Flyers. I'm not going to jinx anything for any fans out there. If they do get past the Flyers, they're going to need him to score. Some of it, I think, might be the toll of the season on him. I think, you know, he's no spring chicken, and maybe he's not the same player that he was 2 or 3 years ago. But a lot of what I saw when the Rangers traded for him was he was getting to the net and he was getting these shots off, and the puck just wasn't going in. So some of it I also think is puck luck. I think, you know, you can see a guy sometimes in hockey just make the right pass, make the right shot, and it's happened. And the goalie will just do something unbelievable. They'll go 2 inches to the left instead of 2 inches to the right. And I've seen a lot of that with San Luis shots. He's just been in the right place. It's just a question of finishing. And I think with the Rangers showing that they can score with, you know, some of their depth, thank goodness, with even without Chris Kreider there, I think that it's only a matter of time before San Luis kind of gets off the schneid in this series, I think.
One more thing that, with the actual gameplay, Jesper Fast was a late season call up, and I don't know if his game is ready for playoff style hockey. And with Kreider still out, and according to Vigneault, indefinitely. Do you think that we maybe see Danny Carcillo, and he did play a couple games on the line with Nash and Stepan. If Foss doesn't really pick up his game to, because I thought he was pretty invisible in game one. If he doesn't pick up his game, do you think that maybe we see Carcillo, especially when we start to get into the games in Philly?
Yeah, I do. I think Fast is a guy with so much potential. There's a lot of talk that he's sort of he's got some of that Carl Hagelin in him with some of that speed. Obviously, you know, a lot of jokes about the name Fast, but
yeah.
He is. He's just speedy. But he's still a guy who's 6 foot. He's still got some bulk to add to his body if he wants to be an NHL player. But, yes, I think you see Danny Carcillo at some point just because you're facing the Flyers, and I guarantee you that in game two you're going to see the Flyers try to be even more physical. You know, they're going to try really hard not to get a stick up high and draw blood like they did in game one, which basically cost them game one. But I do think that if you're going to have a series against a team that tries to out-physical you, you have to have a guy like Carcillo who knows how to handle that kind of thing. I'm not saying Jesper Fast can't. But if he has another game, like if you think he was invisible in game one, and we'll see what happens in game two. But I do think that the option is there, and they will use it to have Carcillo come in just to bring that grit in there.
Now, one thing before we move on to some NFL draft talk. When the schedule was released for the playoffs, it really bothered me. How they handled the scheduling of games in this series. But I know that the NHL wants to get New York on the Sunday game of the week as many times as possible because that's what's going to draw the most viewers. But there are two instances in the series where there are two off days, and then if it goes to 7 games, it's back-to-back nights in two different cities. Do you think that something should be looked into and it really should be evened out?
You know, this is part of I have to say that's life in the NHL. I mean, this happened last year. Remember, the Rangers and Caps went 7, and they played Sunday at Madison Square Garden, and they had to turn around and go down to D.C. Luckily, obviously, it's New York to Philly, which is, what, an hour and a half, hour 45 ride. So it's not the worst schedule for them. And frankly, I sometimes think, and this is just my own theory, that NHL players, in the playoffs at least, they don't love a lot of layoff. I think they like to get in that rhythm, and playing on back-to-back nights is not the worst thing possible. If you're injured, if you're a little banged up or whatever, that's an entirely different story. But I think if this series does go 7, it's not the worst thing for NHL players to have that back-to-back. And it's unfortunate that it's in game 6 and 7 where you have to go. But look, hey, the Rangers have home ice. So getting on that Wednesday, if they were happy to play, he would be at home and kind of be welcome. But, yeah, I think it's something the NHL probably was forced to do, and it's unfortunate. But that's life. That's the hand you're dealt, I guess, yeah. In the playoffs.
Now, you are also, you have been focusing on the NFL draft and want to get into a little bit of draft talk with you. And really, the entire tone of the draft is going to be set by the Houston Texans at number one. Because if they don't go with Jadeveon Clowney, then all boxes are open with teams that may want to trade up with St. Louis at number two. And we all know Jadeveon Clowney is probably number one on 98% of the big boards out there. Is that really, do you think the Texans will end up going Clowney at number one?
I think they will, and it's just, again, and I preface everything I do with NFL draft talk saying, look, it's all smokescreen. I don't believe 90% of what's out there.
Right.
But when you read some of what's been said, I do believe, and what you've seen also out of Jadeveon Clowney, just as far as his workouts went when he did his pro day and his amazing 40 time, he's not just a workout warrior. Somebody said he was a 15 to 20, once in a 15 to 20 year player. And when you hear that, you think, oh, how could the Texans pass up on that? And then, of course, you think of Mario Williams and you know, what happened with him. He turned out to be a fine NFL player, but not the once in a 15-year player. So I think they do go Jadeveon Clowney up top, and I think that if I were the Rams, and I've been saying this for months now, just looking at where their position is, I would trade down. There's no doubt in my mind because they can. There's a team out there that probably wants to guarantee a quarterback. Maybe it's the Browns. I doubt it because at four they'll be fine with getting one. I doubt that the Jaguars are going to end up with it. Could be the Raiders, you know, even though, again, the Raiders could end up with a quarterback down there too. So if there's a team that says, and remember, there's also that talk, let me remind you, of Sammy Watkins going to the Lions at two, which would be, we can talk about
right.
that. I think that's kind of insane. But, yeah, I think if you're the Texans, you take Clowney first and you go, the Rams go with a trade next.
Last year, it was all about the offensive line and how many picks there were, especially early on. How do you rate this year's group of tackles to last year's? With you have Greg Robinson, Jake Matthews, and Taylor Lewan, and last year we had Jokel, Fisher, and Johnson.
It's funny. It's funny you mentioned that because talking about the Rams, I think to myself, they could get a good quality tackle at 9 or 10 if they really wanted to trade down. And I think that's why they should do it. I think this year's class is a little bit down from last year's class. I mean, you thought like the top three picks last year with Jokel that group could have gone 1, 2, and 3. I think Greg Robinson is obviously your top guy, but if you were to end up with a Lewan or a Jake Matthews, or I think even Morgan Moses is being talked about as kind of the top guy. If you end up with one of those guys, and remember, there's Zach Martin too. Great, that's four quality first-round talent tackles. And so if I'm the Rams, I think, great. If I end up with Greg Robinson later, great. If not, then I end up with Jake Matthews, or even lower down, Zach Martin. Those are all guys who have the kind of talent that you need at left tackle or even at right tackle. There's been some talk that right tackle is just as important. So I think this year's class is, in a way, less guaranteed to be the greatest, potential future Hall of Famers, but there's no dearth of quality talent to get even later down, which I think is more valuable in a way because if there are teams that want to move down, they can get somebody that can protect their quarterback, and obviously the Rams need that.
Now, the Giants are sitting at 12, and they had a pretty productive offseason. They filled a lot of holes, but there are three holes that I think that they still need to fill, and they will do early on in the draft. Tight end, defensive tackle, and wide receiver. And I don't think Mike Evans will be there when they pick at 12. If he is, then I think the card should be handed in within 15 seconds. but if Mike Evans isn't there, and you do see that Eric Ebron and Aaron Donald, I have Donald as my number one defensive tackle. I don't like Timmy Jernigan nearly as much as most other people do. But if someone like an Aaron Donald and Eric Ebron are on the board, what direction do you think the Giants go?
Well, I'm this is why I'm not Jerry Reese, but if it's me and I have a chance there to get one of those two, I might even trade down. And this is, I'll play at the possibility for a second. You could trade down to Chicago, who's looking for a DT. Every single mock draft has them either taking Aaron Donald or Jernigan. You could, I don't think this is happening, trade with the Cowboys at 16, who are looking, same thing, for a DT. And maybe you can get Ebron there, but let's say they're keeping their pick. I think the direction, if you're Jerry Reese, usually they're going defense. This is the year that I take Eric Ebron because he's the one tight end that probably has that kind of talent. I know there's talk about Amaro being kind of a big pick, but you could probably wait till the second round if you end up taking a DT here. And at 12, you're getting the guy who's, you know, in the age of the tight end, the one you can line up in the slot, the one you can line up as a tight end, the one who can block. And I think that's the better pick there. I know that Aaron Donald has tons of talent, and frankly, he might be the right pick there. I don't know, maybe to placate the fans, but I think taking another defensive guy might rankle people, especially given Eli Manning's struggles last year. And remember, he's won two rings with some decent tight end talent that he could trust, and I don't think he's had that in the last few years. So I'm going to go with Ebron. But if they take Aaron Donald, as a critic and not as a fan, I say great pick. Guy's got some talent to get into the backfield to disrupt things. He's a guy who can stuff the run. So wouldn't be a bad pick either way. And, yeah, Mike Evans is the last thing, probably past pick 7 or 8.
Right. Last one with the Jets. They're sitting at 18. They are loaded with a lot of picks. Now, I know some of them are the compensatory picks, which can't be moved. But do you see any scenario where the Jets fall in love with one of these pass catchers and maybe even an Eric Ebron and try and move up by dealing some of these picks to get one of them? If they don't, which wide receiver at 18 do you think, or do you think they go corner?
I don't think they go corner, and it's just I think they feel like they have at least that they might even sign somebody up to scrap heap later on in the year to replace what they've lost. And obviously they had a first rounder from last year that showed up at the end of last season, so maybe they think they have potential there. They'll personally, as a guy who has seen what happens first round cornerbacks, it takes a couple of years sometimes for them to really become the kind of talent that you want. I'm going to say the Jets are going to stay at 18, and I don't think they're going to trade up for Ebron unless he, you know, if he falls to them, great. They'll take him in a heartbeat. But I think they are going to wait and not trade up because look at how many wide receivers are talented in this first round. There's a possibility of 5 or 6 that could come in. So if there's a richness of talent there, obviously Mike Evans will be gone by then, long gone probably. Odell Beckham is one guy who's kind of your solid pass catcher. And then, obviously, everyone's talking about Brandon Cooks, who's a small guy, but the kind of guy with great hands and great speed and game-breaking speed. I'd absolutely, at 18, take Brandon Cooks. Why not? He's a guy who can really give them another quality target that they haven't had in the last few seasons. And, you know, I think a lot of people have been saying, oh, wait a second, they have already a slot receiver. Well, this guy doesn't necessarily grade out as a slot receiver. So just imagine
he played most of his time at Oregon State on the outside.
Yeah, exactly. So great. So now you have three pass catchers there, Decker obviously being your big target. And then you've got two guys scampering around out there with speed and with good hands. I think that would be fine for the Jets. Kelvin Benjamin's another guy who's a first-round talent, but and he's kind of your huge 6'5", prototypical, maybe possession guy. So maybe that's an option, but I think it's going to be Cooks all the way, and I think he'll be available by then. The other guy is Corey Latimer, who's become this first-round, suddenly out of nowhere, end-of-the-first-round talent that some guys are looking at on tape and going, wait a second, he could be a guy there. But if there's all that talent, the wide receiver in the first round, why not take one of them at 18 and be fine with it? Or even trade down if you feel like you can get another quality set of hands out there.
It was funny that you mentioned Cody Latimer. I hadn't really done any film study on him. And then I was listening to the Todd McShay and Mel Kiper podcast. And Todd McShay put Latimer in the first round. And I said, who? And I went, and then I started watching some of his games. This kid can play. And if he falls into the second round, he's going to be a steal for somebody.
Right, and I think that there are other names, again, with receiver, and I know I'm hawking on this, but I think it's just looking at the amount of wide receiver talent in this draft. Here's some other names. You got Devonta Adams out of Fresno State, who was pegged as a first-rounder early on. You've got Jordan Matthews out of Vanderbilt, who's another guy who has gone up and down draft boards, and Bruce Ellington out of South Carolina. We've just named, what, 7 or 8 receivers? So any of those guys in either the first or second round, I think a lot of teams who need wide receivers are going to be stocking up in the second round and early second round, late first round, where they're going to say it's a luxury, but we could absolutely take one of these guys and be happy with it. The Niners could use one. I think the Broncos have been, there's a lot of talk about them taking defensive guys. They could add another receiver for Peyton Manning in the second round. I mean, it's going to be a really interesting draft offensively, I think, for teams, less so defensively this year.
Well, Charles, I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes today. Great stuff. Everyone, make sure you follow Charles on Twitter at CharlesCurtis82. And I hope to talk to you soon, maybe the week leading up to the draft when we have our NFL draft special where we will be doing a live mock on the air. Maybe you'll be able to join us for that.
I'll see if I can. That sounds exciting. I always love doing a mock. There's no doubt about that.
All right, Charles. Thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks a lot.
The great Charles Curtis of NJ.com. I'm glad that he brought up Cody Latimer, because as I told Charles, this kid is I hadn't heard much about him, and I've been studying draft tape since the week of the BCS championship game. Is when I started. And I hadn't heard really any buzz on Cody Latimer until I heard Todd McShay bring him up and put him, he had him at 23 to the Chiefs. And so I said, okay, I guess this is someone that I need to research a little bit. And the kid can flat out play. He's tough to press. He's got a very nice physical build to his body. He can move. He goes up and makes catches at its highest point. And if he went to a different school in the Big Ten other than Indiana, we may be talking about this kid as a top 20 pick. Like I said, if he falls into the second round, even look, if the Giants do decide to go Aaron Donald or some other defensive player, or maybe even an Eric Ebron, and they don't like necessarily any of the defensive players that are there for them in the second round. And if Cody Latimer is sitting there at, I believe it's 43 that the Giants are picking in the second round, that, oh, what a perfect fit he would be for that offense. Like I said, thank you, Charles, for giving us almost a half hour of your morning today. I have my top 10 of different positions. We're going to go over my my top 10 quarterbacks and wide receivers of this year's draft. My number one quarterback, and I know that his pro day has really made him slip down some boards, and I think if a quarterback, one of the top three, does slip, it may be him, but I still think Teddy Bridgewater is my number one quarterback. I don't know if Cleveland is a great spot for him because he doesn't have the strongest arm. Cleveland can get windy and cold in the second half of the year. But if I think if he ends up at number five to Oakland or number eight to Minnesota, I think those are great fits. Teddy Bridgewater, my number one quarterback. The quarterback who I do think will be the first one taken is Johnny Manziel out of Texas A&M. We all know Johnny Football. I've never had so much difficulty trying to grade out a quarterback in my life. And I've been, this is probably about my fifth or sixth year really doing heavy NFL draft study. I can't get a grasp of what Johnny Manziel is going to be at the NFL level. He's going to be able to extend plays with his legs. He can make every single throw in the book. He's got a great arm. Is he going to be able to throw the spiral enough? Because he didn't throw a spiral enough in college. And is he going to be able to improve his decision-making? Because a lot of the 50-50 balls that he threw up in college were to Mike Evans, and Mike Evans is far superior to most defensive backs that he had to play in college. He's not going to have that luxury in the NFL. And some of those 50-50 balls that he threw up in college are going to be 25-75 and have a great shot at being intercepted. The kid's got moxie. There's no doubt that he's going to bring attention to wherever he goes. And that's why I think he ends up at number three with Jacksonville. I know there is some talk about him going number one overall to Houston. I don't see it. I can understand why. I mean, he's got the Texas kid, want to keep him in the state. He'd be a god there. They need a quarterback. I just don't know if he's worthy of being taken ahead of Jadeveon Clowney. I don't see it. The number three guy that I have on my list is Blake Bortles out of Central Florida. Here's your prototypical 6'5", 230-pound quarterback. He looks like Ben Roethlisberger when Roethlisberger came out of Miami of Ohio. He's not as seasoned as Roethlisberger was then. And Roethlisberger had much more hype during the season than Bortles did. But I think that if he can become a Ben Roethlisberger, then that is his ceiling. But his floor can be awful low too. I do see him as a good fit. In fact, in my last mock, I had him going number 8 to Minnesota. Number 4 guy on my list, Zach Mettenberger. I think here's where you see your quarterback for the Houston Texans. He's healed remarkably from his ACL injury in mid-November. He's not 100% yet, but he's close. And I think that Mettenberger has the arm that you want your quarterback to have. Especially if you put him in a controlled environment. Look at what Houston has. They're going to be in a controlled environment when they play their 8 home games. They'll play in a dome when they play in Indianapolis. And then the other two divisional road games are Jacksonville and Tennessee. Tennessee is the one that maybe, but if they get them early in the season, then you're looking at 11, a guaranteed 11 games that they're going to be playing in controlled or decent weather. And that is going to make Mettenberger an outstanding player. And he may be the 5th quarterback taken. I think he has all the tools necessary to be the best when all is said and done from this group. My number 5 quarterback, Derek Carr, out of Fresno State, brother of former number 1 overall pick, David Carr. And if both Mettenberger and Carr are on the board, I think there are a lot of teams that have Carr rated ahead of Mettenberger. I don't think the Houston Texans even have Derek Carr listed on their board, because if they were ever to take the brother of David Carr, their fan base would go into such a complete outrage that they would lose most of their season ticket holders. I doubt that they even have Derek Carr on their board. I have Derek Carr listed as my 5th, but I think he ends up as the 4th quarterback off the board. I had him going 26 to the Cleveland Browns. My number 6 quarterback is a guy that I have ranked higher than a lot of people do. I love what his all-around game, and that's Jimmy Garoppolo out of Eastern Illinois. He can extend plays. He can make the throws. He's a good decision maker. And if he had an SEC team around him, Jimmy Garoppolo may have been the 3rd quarterback on a lot of boards. And you're talking about a top 10 pick. So I love what this kid brings to the game. My number 7 guy is Aaron Murray, quarterback out of Georgia. A lot of people are talking about his lack of arm strength. I think his arm strength is better than what a lot of people are saying. He's a great decision maker. He's a very accurate thrower. And if he weren't coming off a knee injury, maybe we're talking about him as one of the top 5 quarterbacks on everybody's boards. Him and Mettenberger got injured right around the same time. I think Mettenberger's recovery has been quicker, and that may be why he's higher on a lot of people's boards. But Mettenberger is also the more prototypical size of a quarterback. Aaron Murray reminds a lot of people of Drew Brees. which is why I think if he were to fall somewhere in the third round, I think that's a great landing spot for him to go into New Orleans, where he can learn behind Drew Brees for the next two or three years while Brees finishes out his career. My number eight guy, Tom Savage, out of Pittsburgh. And to be honest, I had heard some buzz about him early on in draft season. And I just didn't want to believe it until I started watching more and more film. The first half of his season wasn't great. Second half of his season was remarkable. Kid's got a cannon. And Pitt isn't the same football factory that they have been, but this kid's good. He's not ready to play in the NFL yet, which is why I think if you see him go to a place like the Steelers, I think he would be a great fit as a backup for the Steelers in the fourth round, maybe. Fourth or fifth. New England, if they decide to part ways with Ryan Mallett to see if they can gain any additional picks, I think those are two great situations. If he can learn behind either a Roethlisberger or Brady, kid can play in cold weather. He can make the throws. He's not going to be able to extend plays the way that Roethlisberger does, which may be better for him to either learn or maybe go to New England, and because we all know Brady isn't a great play extender. But I think he's a great fit in either one of those two situations. My number nine guy, and I have him a lot lower on my board than a lot of people do, is A.J. McCarron, the quarterback of the Alabama, or former quarterback of the Alabama Crimson Tide. I dropped him for a couple reasons. One reason was how he handled the Senior Bowl situation, and I know that doesn't really mean a lot for what kind of player he is on the field. But the Senior Bowl takes place in Mobile, Alabama. That's where he is. I mean, he's a god in Alabama because of him being able to bring in the national championships. Look at what he's done with his fiance, who got all that recognition during the national championship game against Notre Dame. But another reason why I've dropped him is because now all these reports that he's making a reality show with his fiance. I don't think his mind is... In his head, he's ready to be an NFL quarterback. I just don't see it. Yeah, he's a game manager. He doesn't turn the ball over, but he doesn't have a great arm. There are sometimes he doesn't make great decisions with his route progressions. I think he's going to be a good backup in the league. I don't think he will be a starter. And my number 10 guy, Logan Thomas out of Virginia Tech, he's got the size, 6'6", 240. He's a big Cam Newton, but he needs to learn how to throw the ball. Maybe he becomes a tight end. He was a tight end in high school. Maybe he becomes a tight end because of how athletic he is. But he wants to be a quarterback. And if he wants to be a quarterback, then maybe you let him try it out. But again, he's not ready to be an NFL quarterback. He needs to go somewhere where he can learn learn the game. I want to thank everyone for joining us on this special Saturday morning edition of Beyond the Bench. Once again, follow me on Twitter at rstern33bsp. I want to thank Charles Curtis of NJ.com for joining us this morning. Follow him on Twitter at charlescurtis82. We will be back in our regular time slot on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock next week. Enjoy your week of sports. Go watch some hockey, brush up on some draft tape, and we'll talk to you then. Have a great week, everybody.